Ray, we'll catch everyone again next week. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Have a great day, Stewie. Good luck, everyone.
Nations. Orange's turn to saddle up is on Sunday, February 15. Racing Orange's Family Fun Day will be a fantastic day out for everyone. Free entertainment includes jumping castles, pony rides, face painting, plus fashions on the field and more. Sky Sports Radio and Sky Racing World have the mounting yard covered at Orange, Sunday, February 15.
For more on TAB Saddle Up Sundays, visit gocountryracing.com.au.
G'day, Glenn McGrath here for the McGrath Foundation. Each year we're proud to bring pink to the SCG to help fund McGrath breast care nurses nationally. This year you can bring some pink into your community by getting your cricket club involved in Pink Stumps Day. Every club that registers automatically receives an amazing pink players kit valued at over $500 and goes into the draw for a chance to have me at your Pink Stumps Day. Registration is limited, so head to mcgrathfoundation.com.au today. The McGrath Foundation. Together, we can make a difference.
If you're after a skid steer loader that leads the way in quality, reliability and durability, then Toyota Material Handling has the right solution for you. That's because for earth-moving and excavating, the Toyota Husky skid steer loader leads the pack. From 320 to a massive 900 kilogram capacity, get the Husky skid steer loader from Toyota Material Handling. It's that top dog in the dirt. Call 1-800-425-438 or visit toyotaskidsteerloader.com.
Are you looking to buy or sell a thoroughbred? Maybe a broodmare, tried racehorse or even a yearling? Look no further than bloodstockauction.com, Australia's first 100% online auction. Horses go under the hammer from 7 p.m. the first and third Tuesday of every month. Catalogue available 5 days prior. Trading horses has never been easier. Log on and become a member today. Access to Bloodstock worldwide. bloodstockauction.com. Delivering the sales ring to you.
Terrific atmosphere here as co-captains TK and Slats lead out the big sports breakfast team of experts. By gee, there's plenty of strength and skill in that lineup.
Follow the big sports breakfast team weekday mornings from 5:30 on Sky Sports Radio and Sky Racing One. Thanks to TAB and the Mazda BT50 Ute. On Sky Sports Radio, your racing and sports leader, it's time for TAB Sports Talk. Yes!
First ball! The 300 post and a goal for the Wanderers!
Takes a set off Rafael Nadal for the first time.
What about a birdie? What about an eagle? What about an albatross?
Adam Scott, you are a star.
Bringing you the latest in local and international sports.
Good morning, great to have you covered. It's coming up to 3 minutes after 10 and welcome to TAB Sports Talk. Trent Langscale with us now. Trent, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Simon.
Well, where do we start with everything that's happened across the weekend? I'd imagine the big point was the soccer last night, but equally as big, the Serena Williams match in Melbourne.
Absolutely. Well, the ASIAD Cup final, it was a huge night at ANZ Stadium. It looked like the Socceroos had it all sewn up in normal time, and then South Korea equalised, and the Nails all of a sudden had to get bitten for the next half an hour in extra time. But then James Troisi, he did the job there, and they're currently at Pitt Street Mall, the Socceroos, getting mobbed by the fans after winning the ASIAD Cup for the first time. So a fantastic night. But that wasn't the only final that was happening last night as well, Simon, because we had the women's singles final at the Australian Open at Rod Laver Arena, and Serena Williams once again showing her class, 6 Australian Opens, and continues her dominance over Maria Sharapova.
Well, our first guest on the TAB Sports Talk this morning is Channel 7 commentator Renee Stubbs. She joins us now. Good morning, Renee.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for your time.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Yes, Renee, well, 6-time Grand Slam winner yourself, we better get that out there, four times in the women's doubles and 2 in the mix, so good to have a Grand Slam champion with us. Renee, at the start of the tournament, it looked as though Serena was struggling a little bit, wasn't the greatest preparation at the Hopman Cup, but it looked like it was a little bit of a ruse in the end, because apart from a couple of matches where she struggled in the opening set, she just breezed her way through the tournament and once again was too good for Maria Sharapova last night.
Yeah, look, you know, Hopman Cup was never an indicator for me about how Serena was going to play in Melbourne. I mean, she wasn't really up to play. It's essentially an exhibition over in Hopman Cup, so I think she didn't really get up for it. I mean, I think it was the early part of the year for her. She had a long year last year, so I think she was preparing herself for Melbourne. I wasn't worried about her coming in here at all. think the only thing that was a concern is, can Serena get through the first week? Because that's usually where she's at her most vulnerable. And, you know, she did have a couple of close matches early on. She went three sets twice, and that's very unusual for her. But, you know, once she gets into the second week and starts getting her feet, you know, her feet really stuck into the tournament, then not a lot you can do. And we saw that last night, because it was a really great, fabulous match. Sharapova did not play badly at all. Serena was just too good.
Yes, and also we mentioned throughout the first week, and happened last year as well with the Grand Slams, where she only won the one at the US Open, and there were times last year when she was beaten by Anna Ivanovic at the Australian Open last year, and Garbine Muguruza at the French Open, that perhaps at times just wasn't up to the mark, and it was perhaps herself actually being beaten rather than, well, the opponent obviously played pretty well as well, but the fact that Serena Williams just wasn't up for it at a certain point, and then all of a sudden at the start of the Australian Open she had those tough first setters against Muguruza, that was one of them, but she's managed to progress through and win the title, just continuing her dominance over the women.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think the shock last year was losing to Cornet at Wimbledon. I mean, it was possible for her to lose matches against, I mean, very good players. Obviously, Muguruza is a very good player, and Ivanovic is herself as the world number one and Grand Slam champion, but, you know, Serena's just that type of player that once she gets into the draw and starts getting her confidence up and starts to relax. Believe it or not, she relaxes as she goes further in the draw. The earlier in the tournament, she's more uptight, more nervous. I think she knows she's vulnerable in early rounds, but once she gets the serve going, like she did, you know, in the semifinals and finals, then there's just absolutely no way you can beat her.
Well, you were lucky enough to chat to her as well at a couple of those post-match interviews as well at Rod Laver Arena, and she was also getting over what appeared to be a flu as well. At one stage, you actually thought she might have swallowed a fly during one of the matches, but it was just that she does seem to get nervous really early on in the tournament, which is surprising for the Grand Slam champion she is. But, like I said, 16 straight wins over Maria Sharapova, and like I said, as you said, it wasn't the fact that Sharapova played bad, it's just that Serena Williams, when she is on song, she is almost unbeatable.
Yeah, she's been really sick. I mean, it was quite obvious for everybody to see. I mean, she even, you know, told everybody in the middle of that match last night. She went back after a coughing fit and threw up a little bit. So, look, this wasn't a Serena Williams, you know, physically at her best. Certainly, she's been fighting a cold for the at least the last week, where it's been really devastating. So, I think, you know, in some strange way, the cold helps her because it sort of takes away those nerves. And it takes, look, we see how emotional she is. I mean, we saw it on the court last night when she's a super emotional person. So rather than sort of get emotional in a negative way, she sort of channeled all the energy she possibly could into being positive and playing the best tennis last night.
Absolutely. There was plenty of joy after she won the title last night, jumping around at everything else. So she was overjoyed, and you'd think that she just won her maiden Grand Slam, let alone the title that she won there last night at Rod Laver Arena. You've been there for the 2 weeks, Renee, and also the prior tournaments as well as part of the Channel 7 coverage. How big has the atmosphere been there in the past fortnight, particularly with the Aussies? We saw how well Nick Kyrgios did, and we've got the young talent with Tanasi Kokkinakis as well, and Bernard Tomic when he gets it right. In previous years, the Australian influence hasn't been as great on both sides, the men and the women, but it must have been a fantastic 2 weeks there, particularly with all the build-up with Kyrgios when he played Murray.
Oh, yeah, I think, look, we've set the tone for the next decade of men's tennis here in Australia. I think the Australian Open's going to be really happy to have players as good as Bernie and, Kokkinakis and Kyrgios, they're here to stay. They're really players. They have all the tools. They have all the weapons. They also prove that they're great fighters. So, you know, on the men's side, it's going to be an exciting decade, I think, for men's tennis at the Australian Open. And is there anything better than coming to, you know, Melbourne Park and watching Aussies play and having that, you know, homegrown sort of talent do well? And it, look, those guys, they have enough talent to win the tournament one day. And on the women's side, hopefully, you know, we can get a couple of the youngsters to come through as well and give us the same kind of... we had Casey DeLac last year, so sometimes it's a man, sometimes it's a
man. Okay, just breaking up a little bit there, Renee, but we'll continue on. Looking at the men's singles final tonight, should be an absolute ripper. You've got Novak Djokovic against Andy Murray. Djokovic, he didn't drop a set until the semi-final on Friday night when he went to 5 sets against Wawrinka, but that isn't uncommon at the Australian Open with Djokovic and Wawrinka to play 5 sets. And Andy Murray has looked fantastic throughout the tournament, and aside from losing that first set tiebreaker to Thomas Berdych on Thursday night, he just completely tore him apart in the last 3 sets to make his way through to the final this evening.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of the dream final for the for everybody again, because I think these are the two best players in the world at the present moment. I mean, Murray's coming off a really, you know, a tough year and a half getting over his back injury. I think he's absolute full form. He's playing the best tennis I've seen play. I think his influence from Emily Meresmo is obvious to see. He's attacking the ball more. He's being more aggressive. But he believes and he knows he can win Grand Slams. The last time that these two played here at the Australian Open, it was quite the match. So if it's anything like that one a few years ago that Novak and Andy played, I'm getting set for a midnight finish at least.
Well, we've had a few late nights at the Open and also last night as well, so there's a fair bit of adrenaline that we can, I reckon, get through to tonight if it does go to the five sets. Just looking at the career records, Djokovic leads 15-8. He was 4-0 against Andy Murray last year. You mentioned that Murray's last win was at Wimbledon in 2013, so Djokovic had the four wins last year, and at the Australian Open, Djokovic has a 3-0 record, and that includes two of the finals back in 2011 and 2013. We saw that Sharapova doesn't have the greatest record against Serena Williams, and you've talked about how Murray seems to have recovered from the back injury. Does he look at those stats tonight and really doesn't worry about it too much, or is it basically a different player and he thinks that he can get over the line against Djokovic?
No, this is a different player compared to even last year when he lost the matches. And this is five sets, and it's at the Australian Open, and I know he's lost to Novak here three times, but like I said, the last time that they played was one of the truly great matches, and I think it was actually the match that set the tone for Andy to win the US Open following at the end of that year. So, and then to go on and win the gold medal in Wimbledon the following year. I think it gave him the true confidence to know that he can beat Novak here in Australia. You know, he's beaten Novak in finals of Grand Slams before, and I think this is going to be, you know, sort of a pick-em. I think that you can go with both and not look silly.
All right, well, we'll just have a look at the odds. And Novak Djokovic is the $1.42 favourite, and Andy Murray at $2.90. So just from what you're saying, Renee, you'd think that Andy Murray at $2.90 wouldn't be a bad tip there. Just in the set betting, Djokovic to win four sets is the favourite way at $3.25. Djokovic in straight sets at $3.60. Djokovic in five sets at $5. And you've got Murray in five sets at $6.50. Now, the coverage begins at 6:30 tonight on Channel 7 for the men's singles final. But also at 4 o'clock at Rod Laver Arena, we have the mixed doubles final. And Martina Hingis doesn't seem to enjoy retirement, I think, Renee, because she's in the mixed doubles final. She's partnering with Leander Paes, and they're up against Kristina Mladenovic and Daniel Nestor. So Martina Hingis has fantastic memories of Rod Laver Arena, so good to see her in the mixed doubles final at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
Yeah, look, it's a bit of a crappy day in Melbourne, so if you've got not a lot to do, I would advise getting out and watching that mixed doubles final, because it is going to be a cracker. There will be some amazing points in that match. I mean, Leander's hit it behind his back volley the other day. Martina's hit a shot around the post during this tournament. Daniel Nestor, one of the great doubles players of all time, as is Leander Paes. And Mladenovic and Nestor are defending champions. They've also done very well over the years in mixed doubles, so that is going to be, I'm commentating the match and I'm looking forward to it. There's certain matches you like to sit down and watch, and that will be definitely one of them.
Just a quick look at the odds there for that one. And Hingis and Paes are the favourites at $1.60, with Mladenovic and Nesta at $2.25. So once again, the mixed doubles final at 4 o'clock this afternoon, and then the Channel 7 coverage of the men's singles final from 6:30, and then 7:30 we'll see Novak Djokovic and Andy Murray walk out to Rod Laver Arena for the men's singles final. Once again, you'll see all the coverage on Channel 7. Renee, it's been great to talk to you this morning. We've enjoyed the commentary and the coverage throughout the 2 weeks of the Australian Open, and then the tournaments preceding that, and Brisbane in Sydney. So good luck with the commentary today of the mixed doubles final, and thanks for your time to speak on TAB Sports Talk this morning. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, guys. And I would go with the underdogs today if I had to have a bet. So there you go.
Okay, Mladenovic and Nesta, $2.25, and Andy Murray, $2.90 in the final for the men's singles. Once again, thanks for your time, Renee.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Good on you, Renee. Renee Stubbs there from Channel 7. Now, we'll get to our next guest, literally Mark Guest, in just a moment. He was at the soccer last night, Trent, but in the meantime, we'll just take a quick break.
Autumn racing is calling, and all the fantastic Group 1 thoroughbred action is just around the corner. TAB have now opened fixed odds markets for a range of big autumn racing features, including the TUI's new Golden Slipper and the Championships, featuring the Star Doncaster Mile, the BMW Australian Derby and the Longines Queen Elizabeth Stakes. So answer the call and have a crack today at your local TAB, tab.com.au, or on your mobile. Gamble responsibly.
Here's the co-captains, Kennedy and Slater, leading out the big sports breakfast team of experts. There's Middleton, Gallen, Parker, King, Breyer, Magnay, Kent, Pascalides, Rogers, Fain, Gallegos, Webster. Well, there's plenty of experience and talent in that lineup. Real premiership material if ever I saw it.
Make the big sports breakfast your team to follow. Playing every weekday morning from 5:30 on Sky Sports Radio and Sky Racing 1. Thanks to Tab and the Mazda BT50 Ute. On Sky Sports Radio, this is Tab Sports Talk.
Can you believe it?
Welcome back to the program. It's a quarter past ten. Trent, as I come back to you, well, it was a magnificent match at ANZ Stadium last night. At about 77,000 there capacity, it was full.
Tremendous crowd there for the Asian Cup final. Once again, as we said at the start, Australia, they had the 1-0 lead, and there were some nervous moments after South Korea equalised just before the end of normal time. But James Troisi, and you've got to give credit to Tommy Juric as well for keeping the ball alive to actually get the cross in. The keeper deflected it into the path of Troisi, and he scored what ended up being the winning goal. One of the men that was lucky enough to be there, we see him on Sky Racing, particularly with the Melbourne tips. He was there last night. Mark Guest. Guesty, good morning to you in a party atmosphere.
Hiya, Simon. Trent. And what were the odds, Trent, that I would pull up in good condition?
I reckon you've done pretty well, actually.
It was fantastic. I'm a soccer fan. I mean, obviously horse racing is my passion, but soccer is definitely up there. I've been following football for... or what the world calls football, for many years, and to see Australia finally get some decent silverware, it was pretty emotional, but it was sort of a relief in another way, because we sort of half expected Australia to win. But when the Korea Republic took it up to Australia, you could sense that we were on your edge of your seat for most of the night, and it was a great game. It would have been very, very disappointing if we had have lost, and for Tim Cahill especially, because he was part of their best generation, the one before, and I'd say that he wouldn't be playing many more years, but I would say that really capped off what most consider the best soccer of all time.
Well, it did seem as though the goal that we scored through Massimo Luongo, an absolute ripper, was it against the run of play, because South Korea did look to dominate for most of the first half, and then Luongo got the goal to put us 1-0 in front as we approached half-time. And just, I was at Tabcorp Park, Melton Guesty, for the Tab Victoria Cup, and there was an audible sigh when South Korea equalised. So I can only imagine how much there was when pretty much most of the 80,000 that were at the crowd there at ANZ Stadium thought once that was an equalised goal and we were heading into extra time.
Well, I don't know how it looked from anyone watching on television, but in the stadium, it felt like it was a South Korea or Korea Republic home game. It was, They had 20% of the crowd, it was around 20%, and yet I thought the noise they made was a lot greater than the Australians. So I've got to hand it to the supporters of South Korea. It's a Korea Republic, isn't it? Not South Korea, same sort of thing.
Yeah, Korea Republic, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Well, they were amazing, their supporters. Even after the final whistle last night, they were still chanting their team's name. And it was, I think it was great to see. I just felt that Australia was sort of waiting for will we win this, and it was like anticipation that we might have got beaten last night. That's how it felt in the stadium. So it was real edge of your seat stuff, but finally we got the result that, well, you know, we'd been unlucky, or not, I wouldn't say unlucky, we were beaten in the quarterfinals when we first entered the Asian Cup in 2006, and then of course we remember 2011 mm-hmm. when Japan defeated us. And I would say, because it was a home game, home final, When is it going to be held in Australia again? And also, it's very difficult when Australia goes abroad to play in these other Asian countries. So to win it on home soil, which a lot of the champions of the Asian Cup have been at home. So that was that's why I think it was such a relief for Australian football. And it's only going to really boost the profile of the Socceroos in the country, I'd say, even though 2006 really put us on the map. And I tell you what, too, that stadium has produced some magnificent sporting moments in Australia. The Cathy Freeman, who could forget her winning the gold medal? That I would say that's the best sporting moment I've ever been to, the Cathy Freeman. But this thing last night, that's certainly up there.
Yes, it's been pretty good, that stadium, for obviously last night, and also when, that penalty shootout, John Aloisi running down the flank at ANZ Stadium when we progressed through to the 2006 World Cup against Uruguay on the penalty shootout. Mark Schwarzer was a national hero as well, so it was fantastic. Yes, you will keep talking. They are behind the tapes of the first at Wyndham, so we'll have a couple more questions to you as well. Are you actually heading down the Pitt Street Mall where the Socceroos are gathering at the moment?
I will be. It's 2 o'clock, so I'm heading down there. It's a beautiful day, as you know, in Sydney. So I'm going to Melbourne later on this afternoon. Not looking forward to... apparently, the weather's not too good. I heard Renee Stubbs just before say that it wasn't a great day in Melbourne, so that's going to be fun, flying into the Melbourne weather. But importantly, I'm in Sydney for this to see the Socceroos. That was the main reason I made the venture up to Sydney. So I achieved what I came up here for.
So their first international trophy in 93 years, Guesty. What were the celebrations like afterwards? Where did everyone head to?
Well, getting out of Homebush isn't that easy.
No.
It was just unbelievable. It was like I'd been to a couple of... the World Cups I've been to, it was very difficult getting out of some stadiums, and it reminded me of some of those stadiums, like the Allianz Arena in Munich. There's sort of one way to get out of the stadium, and it's similar to... last night, it was probably an hour before we got onto the train and into the city. But people were chanting, and it wasn't like I thought it would be. There would have been a lot more celebrations. But I think everyone did that in the stadium after the game, and most of the crowd stayed behind to watch. And that's why I suppose it was very difficult to get out of the ground.
On course. All right, Guesty, we better wrap it up there. They have jumped at Wyndham, but thanks very much for your time this morning, and have fun at the parade and safe travels back to Melbourne.
Go the Aussies.
Good on you, Mark. Mark Guest there. Let's get to Wyndham. This is race one.
Next on the outside, Celeste Franco. Denny Knows Best runs in fifth place, about four lengths away. About eight behind that to Sundon Invasion. Five further afield to Hope and Pray. About eight or nine to One Cool Chick. And about 15 back to Snoop Dogg, who was very slow to move away. Up around the turn the first time, the local leads love the moment. The Pretty Chestnut's in front by a length and a half and having a good look at the scenery. Ears pricked up front. Love Struck Romeo has its back. A length and a half away is Miss Coco, then Celeste Franco, three or four lengths to Denny Knows Best. Down the straight they work with 1600 metres to run. There's about nine or ten lengths further astern behind those two, Sundon Invasion. Hope and Pray, a big gap away to One Cool Chick and a bigger gap to Snoop Dogg. At the winning post, around to run, Love the Moment. In front, the local and trotting very well. Right behind it is Love Struck Romeo. Third is Miss Coco. Two lengths away, fourth is Celeste Franco. Then Denny Knows Best. Starts to close the gap on the first fire. Four. There's about seven or eight lengths further astern behind those, also making ground. Sundon Invasion, Hope and Pray, One Cool Chick. And Snoop Dogg is too far back to matter. They're about to swing into the back now. Pacemaker, Love the Moment, still striding out pretty well, swings them around the bend into the back and runs to the 1,000. Right behind it is Love Struck Romeo. About four lengths away to Celeste Franco, who's got past Miss Coco. Denny Knows Best about six away and closing on this bunch. A bit of a gap, about eight or nine back to the other two, Hope and Pray and Sundon Invasion. They run to the end of the back straight with 800 left to go. We're down to two. Love the Moment leads by a length and a half. It's being tracked at every stride by Love Struck Romeo. About five away is Celeste Franco holding third. Denny Knows Best comes after that though. It's about six away and starting to close the gap a little. Galloping was Miss Coco. Going past it, Hope and Pray and Sundon Invasion. The two leaders roll up to the home turn. They're just shy of the 400. Love the Moment's been there right from the step out. As the threat right behind it, Love Struck Romeo. Still on the mark, is about to angle to the outside as they come to the home turn. There's about eight or nine lengths away, Celeste Franco, and it's about six in front off Denny Knows Best. One Cool Chick's made up a stack of ground and is appearing over on the outside for the minor money. It is Love the Moment, the inside. Love Struck Romeo's out to have it on the outside. It's closing steadily too. Love Struck Romeo runs up and goes straight on by and down towards the post. Love Struck Romeo takes the first by two lengths. Love the Moment is second. Third is going to be Celeste Franco. Denny Knows Best might just shade One Cool Chick for fourth. Good run, one cool check. Back behind those, the next to go, May, is Sundon Invasion. Hope.
That's the first to Wyndham there. Four Love Struck Romeo is at 4.30 and 1.60. Two Love the Moment, $1.10. And eight, Celeste Franco for third at $5.80. We're in the middle of Tab Sports Talk for this Sunday morning. Trent Langscale is with us from tab.com.au. And Trent, I think we've got our next guest on the line.
We do. We have Phil Buzz Rothfield on the line. Of course, you see him in the Daily Telegraph, and he's actually over in the greater Phoenix area with Super Bowl 49 just over 24 hours away. So good morning to you, Buzz, and how is the atmosphere there in Phoenix, Glendale, around that area?
Yeah, it's really building up, actually. I've been here for 3 days. I'm just out at Scottsdale near the golf tournament right now. But everywhere you go, you know, surrounding towns, it's all Super Bowl, you know, hotel rooms and taxis are just bursting. It's just wonderful atmosphere, not only people from across the United States in town, but international travellers who at the last minute decide to come across and pay a ridiculous amount of money for tickets.
No, it was a fair price. Yes, having a look at five figures was being touted in some newspaper report. So if you've got it, I guess you could afford to get away with it. But yes, it's a pretty penny to actually go and check out the Super Bowl and everything else. You actually,
you know, the average ticket price I was told yesterday by the kickoff will be actually $10,000, because some of the, and it makes it the richest sporting event ever anywhere in the world. You know, forget about the Soccer World Cup, the Olympic Games, anything like that. It's what happens at the last minute. You know, the multis from, you know, out of town and, you know, countries, they'll come into town. I saw one yesterday for sale for 28,000, one ticket. So it's just amazing what people do to watch one game of footy.
No, fantastic. Now, I was going to ask you if you had been to see some of the golf there, the Phoenix Open, and the Phoenix Suns have actually played a couple of NBA games, but you have mentioned that you've just checked out the third round of the Phoenix Open there this afternoon, your time.
Well, I'm just at a place nearby having a beer with a couple of my mates from the media, but look, I didn't actually get out there. I've just been filing my columns for the Telegraph tomorrow. Went to a great ESPN party last night and ran into Jesse Williams, the defence player for the Seattle Seahawks. He's a terrific story. This is the second Super Bowl in a row he's missed with injury. So he might finish up with his second ring tomorrow without ever playing a game, and which is a remarkable thing for a young guy who, 24 years of age, grew up in Brisbane playing rugby league. And you know what? It's a good story. I've had a good chat to him. And I reckon towards the end of his career here, you might even see him in the NRL. I think he's got a goal that he'd like to do that.
Okay, no, fair enough then. Just with the game itself, from a betting point of view, it's very close. Seattle are the slight outsiders of $1.95, with New England at $1.88. There's plenty of other bet tops, but from where you are there in Phoenix, do you get the sense, just you've mentioned the ESPN party and you've run into a couple of journos, do you sense that it is a game where most people are scratching their heads deciding who is actually going to win?
Yeah, look, I don't think there's any question at all that this is a real even money game. And look, Seattle, as everyone knows, were lucky to get there but with that comeback victory, but they are the defending champions and they deserve to be here in Phoenix. What you find here is no one apart from the Patriots fans are cheering for them. Everyone else in America can't stand them. They're labelled cheats wherever you go over the deflate gate with the footies. And so everyone I bump into, or put it that way, 95% of people are desperate for Seattle to win this game of footy.
Okay, and will you have a side tomorrow, or will you just be sitting there at the University of Phoenix Stadium just soaking up the atmosphere and perhaps just doing a little bit of dancing for Katy Perry at halftime as well?
Yeah, I'll definitely be rocking with Katy. Look, the media over here is just extraordinary. Now, you know how we get to the game? We go to Homebush or ANZ Stadium. We get the train from Central. The media press centre here put on buses every 10 minutes to go to the ground. And can you believe every bus has a police escort? So I feel like a president going out there tomorrow. Police escort every bus.
Well, thanks very much for your time this morning, Buzz. We'll let you get back to your mates there and your beer.
Thank you very much, guys. And don't forget, the game's on at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning on ESPN.
We'll be watching. There he is, Bas Rothfield from Arizona there. Trent, what's the latest betting on the match? New England is still favourite?
They are just the favourites here. Simon, we'll just quickly mention a couple of the markets. New England Patriots, $1.88, with the Seattle Seahawks at $1.95. And as Buzz talked about, it's been pretty much a pick for most of the week. But from our betting point of view, the money is 5-1 in favour of the Patriots. There's a couple of different lines with both sides giving away a 1.5-point start. The first touchdown scorer will be pretty popular of the name players. Marshawn Lynch, the Seattle running back, beast mode at $5.50. And for New England, Rob Gronkowski, their tight end, is a $7 chance. In the MVP, Tom Brady is the $2.75 favourite, and Seattle's quarterback